Ben would either have to pay their share or find another family to take it over, which meant vacationing with someone they might not know at all. Susan tried to push the unsettling thought from her mind as she jostled into a pair of boxer-style pajama shorts. She grabbed a baggy tank from her drawer, which was considerably more comfortable than the chemises she'd brought to entice her husband, though not as likely to return Nadal to the moment before Lewis's knock. The borrowed boyfriend look had been hot in college, but middle-aged married mothers had to aspire to higher standards. For the past few weeks, Nadal had worked so late, she'd been in button-down pajamas with her teeth brushed by the time he'd come home. They'd been sleeping next to one another like brothers on a hotel bed, squarely on their individual sides of the mattress, too wiped from their respective days to entertain cuddling, let alone what it might lead to. Susan pulled the shirt over her head, telling herself she could wear the lingerie later in the week. There was little point donning uncomfortable lace just to wait, alone, in the room. Dressed, she slumped onto the white duvet covering the wooden bed like a mushroom cap. The filling puffed around her. She leaned into it, reaching for her husband's laptop charging atop the nightstand, much like her own forgotten computer in her bedroom back home. As long as Nadal was busy, she might as well check her email. The boys might have sent her an all's well message, or at least notes confirming that they'd arrived safely at their camps. The computer prompted her for a password as she pushed back the screen. She entered the twins' birth date, followed by an N, a 4 for the number of people in their family, and an exclamation point. Her techie husband was adamant about passwords having a requisite number of characters and symbols. He was less concerned about using the same code to unlock all of his personal electronics, or that she knew it. After all, she wouldn't try to hack into his company. The computer screen flashed, revealing a white window packed with emails. Nadal's inbox. Apparently, he hadn't bothered to log out of his last session. She pulled her finger over the touchpad, bringing the cursor up to the X in the right-hand corner. Before she clicked, an email caught her eye. It sat in a list, 3 down from the top. The sender was Klein Rachel. For the second time in an hour, she recalled how Rachel had pouted at Nadal, batting her blue eyes like a butterfly flapping its scaly wings. She pulled the cursor to the message and paused atop the subject line, "About Thursday night. Last night." Susan's breaths shortened as she racked her brain for Nadal's whereabouts the prior evening. He'd come home late, as usual, though not because of work. He'd gone to watch Jamal's final baseball game of the season. She'd gone too, but had left with Jonah during the fourth inning after he'd started to complain about the shouting. Afterward, Nadal had said, he'd taken Jamal out to a diner for hot dogs and ice cream. He'd acted as though they'd gone alone. Had Rachel and Will tagged along? Will was on the same team. Susan tapped the trackpad, not hard enough to open the message. She knew Nadal's passwords because he trusted her not to do any crazy spouse things like snoop through his emails, and she trusted him not to hide anything important from her. Reading the message would be a violation of their mutual trust, and she did trust him, didn't she? Nadal wasn't the one, after all, who had spent a year engaged in a flirtation with a slightly senior and married colleague. The relationship with Susan's work husband had ended the way all so-called harmless platonic relationships between people inclined to mutual sexual attraction did, spectacularly poorly. Her friend had been promoted, resulting in celebratory drinks that had culminated in an awkward shared cab ride to the train station, during which he'd confessed his complicated and undeniable feelings. She'd awkwardly denied any similar emotions, embarrassing him and straining their work relationship to the point where basic civility had become difficult. When Nadal had suggested moving east to expand his business, Susan had willingly agreed, fearing what might happen if she and her new boss ever had another occasion to share drinks. She was the reformed flirt, Susan reminded herself, not her husband. Surely, whatever Rachel had written about concerned the boys' baseball game. Her neighbor probably would have sent the message to Susan had she stayed through the whole six innings. Unless, of course, Rachel was confessing her regrettably inappropriate yet unavoidable attraction to Nadal. Susan double-clicked the message, ignoring the pinch of her conscience in favor of the queasiness in her gut. Hi, Nadal. I saw you at Thursday's game, but you'd gone by the time I went over to say hello. I hope you don't feel like you have to avoid me. I know this is awkward, to say the least. I don't usually become involved like this with neighbors, let alone friends, but I can't walk away now. I think if we can keep this just between us, we should be able to come to an arrangement that works for everyone. Looking forward to the vacation. Rachel. The pain in Susan's stomach disappeared. She reread the message. Numb. Involved like this. Can't walk away. Keep this between us. Come to an arrangement. What other secret arrangement did unhappily married women come to with married men? Susan's shock gave way to a heavy ache that started in her chest and spread to her limbs. Rachel's last words to them at dinner echoed in her memory. Ben had suggested that his wife sleep with other people, and Rachel had responded, "Maybe I already have." Chapter 15. The Day After. The home wasn't visible from the street. Gabby considered how convenient that would be for a serial rapist as she turned the Dodge onto the bleached pebble driveway. She parked behind a sky blue Subaru, well away from the concrete building peeking from the trees ahead. Approaching the house on foot was preferable to driving right up to the front door. Andy didn't deserve advanced warning of her arrival. The driveway branched out to a tiled path the same off-white color as the stones. She followed it to the beach house, immediately understanding why the home had been hidden in the forest. Save for the concrete shells of the structure's overlapping rectangles, the entire building was glass. Gabby could see straight through the front of the house to the pool and beach beyond, the same beach where Rachel had been murdered. If Ben had run about a mile east from Rachel's body, he would have seen the party. A shirtless figure emerged from a portion of the house obscured by the concrete sides. He passed a dark wooden wall and pulled on a handle, revealing the interior door of a fridge. The man had brown hair, made darker by its wet state, and a muscular build. Strong thighs bulged from knee-length board shorts. He apparently hadn't noticed her yet. She strode to the glass doors, looking for a bell, but finding only a sleek metal handle. When the walls were all transparent, Gabby guessed, guests didn't need to announce themselves. She tapped on a pane. The man withdrew his head from inside the fridge and faced her. His expression appeared mildly interested, and maybe also confused, though not evidently concerned. Perhaps he wondered whether she was someone from the prior night's party, returning for lost sunglasses. He shut the fridge and strode toward the glass wall. Instead of opening the door, he paused by the handle and examined her face. No doubt, close up, he realized she couldn't have been a party guest. Gabby's 37 years weren't painfully apparent from a distance. Anyone that got an HD view, however, could determine that she wasn't in her 20s. "Hi, may I help you?" The voice penetrated the glass. Gabby grabbed her badge from her belt buckle and pressed it to the pane. "I have some questions about last night." The man's eyes widened, highlighting their river green color. Gabby heard the click of a lock disengaging. She pocketed her badge as the wall of glass slid to the side, exposing half the house to the elements.
If this is about the underage drinking, it was all a misunderstanding.
The man brushed his palm over his hair, shaking droplets from the clumped wet strands.
We'd had no idea that some of the girls were in high school until one of the dads showed up all crazy, throwing punches and shouting about 16-year-olds. My roommate Chris went out to apologize. He told all those girls to go home.
The man pinched the edge of his nose, wiping away some unseen mucus.
We didn't even know how the high school kids heard about it, honestly. We'd invited a group of girls at this bar and told them to bring friends. Everyone there should have been 21.
Gabby continued to stand and nod, letting the silence ask the questions that the man so clearly wanted to answer. Perhaps he'd keep talking about his innocence regarding underage girls until he made some sly admission about Mariel or a strange man with a split lip.
Anyway, since we didn't know, there wasn't anything intentional on our parts.
He scratched the faint shadow on the edge of his chin.
We just wanted to have a party with some cute girls. We're not a bar. There's no one checking ID. And even if we'd hired someone, we don't have the capability to determine what's fake or not. Most of these girls have international passports.
The man finally stopped talking. He stared at Gabby, no doubt waiting for her to say whether or not his excuse had satisfied the complaint she'd been called to investigate. She extended her hand through the open wall and stepped forward, throwing the guy off guard with the friendly greeting that she didn't really want to give. As he shook, she told herself the faux chumminess would be worth it once she got him in cuffs. I'm Detective Gabriella Watkins. I understand the situation you are in, and I get that people sneak into parties, but we have to follow up on every call. She withdrew her notebook and pen from a jacket pocket with an apologetic smile, as though she were a census worker forced to complete a survey. He stepped back, allowing her into the house. Behind him, a mouthwash-colored pool sparkled in its toothpaste setting. Gabby tapped her pen against the pad. So, your name is? The man headed into the kitchen.
Andrew Baird.
He crossed the gray hardwood floor to a white island that Gabby realized held all the necessary appliances, including a Keurig machine. He pointed to a wooden table surrounded by four white chairs.
You want a cup of coffee? I was about to make myself one. Up early, surfing.
Gabby hovered by the kitchen island, refusing to sit in the spot Andy had designated, a subtle way of establishing her control in his space. So, this 16-year-old, did you get her name? Andy pulled the basin from the coffee maker and placed it beneath the faucet.
No, I didn't even see her, really.
He raised his voice over the running water.
I'm guessing she and her friends were out by the pool helping themselves to wine.
Andy shut off the faucet and jostled the full reservoir back into the machine.
Chris talked to the dad, though. You can ask him.
Gabby glanced at the white staircase behind her, also encased in glass. She'd see anyone descending, but this Chris could still get the jump on her, given her position.
Is he here? Your roommate?
Andy pointed to the glass wall facing the beach.
He's the dot on the water out there, praying for a swell. He'll probably come in soon. Nothing's really breaking anymore.
Gabby couldn't see the human speck to whom Andy referred, though she asked for the full name and scribbled it down. As the guy who had gone out to talk to the infuriated father, Chris was the one who would have seen Ben, provided Ben had actually gone to the party. Andy would have been too busy trying to slip something into Mariel's drink. Gabby followed up with a question about whether they were renting the home, even though she already knew the answer. When she asked about Mariel, Andy would invariably invent some things. She needed to gauge his reactions by forcing him to tell known truths and lies.
We're subletting from a friend,
Andy said,
It costs a fortune, but if you surf, what choice do you have? It's either rent a place here for the summer or fly halfway around the globe, praying you'll catch some waves before vacation's up. We're hoping our buddy will let us pop in on the weekends, too, since we sent a bit of extra cash his way. Gabby wrote down surfers, even though the information wasn't relevant to what had happened to Mariel. If she only noted the details that actually pertained to the rape or the murder, Andy would realize what she was here about and clam up. What do you do besides surf? Andy shrugged, as though everything else wasn't interesting. Banking. He gave a slight smile that Gabby guessed someone had told him was endearing, given the extra few seconds it remained on his face.
That's another reason we would never have brought underage girls here to drink. Too much liability.
Gabby wrote down the occupation as the Keurig machine began to hiss. I'm not only here about the teenage drinking, Gabby said. There was a young woman, Mariel Cruz, that came to the party last night. She has long black hair, tan skin, Filipina, pretty. Do you remember her? Andy looked at the Keurig machine as if he suddenly needed to read the directions. He picked up the filled cup and stared at the liquid. Though pupil movements rarely revealed lying, avoiding eye contact entirely was often a tell. Do you remember her? Gabby repeated. He turned around, walking back to the wall of cabinetry. Again, he pulled open the door of the paneled fridge. This time, he removed a carton of milk off a lower shelf, which he opened, poured into his mug, and returned to the fridge door. His movements were slow, the incidental activities of someone weighing the risks of denying having slept with the subject of a police investigation versus confessing to some sort of voluntary relationship. Gabby guessed he was replaying the prior night in his head, trying to establish the odds that his DNA had already put him with the girl. I do remember. The fridge shut with his final answer, cutting off the welcome blast of cold air from the room. Though a breeze wafted from an opening in the east-facing wall, it wasn't strong enough to cool a glass oven. She's beautiful, Andy continued. We got to know one another last night. Gabby jotted that down while maintaining eye contact. Had you met her before? Andy leaned against the back cabinets, apparently forgetting that he'd promised to make a second cup of coffee. No, but we really hit it off. I like her very much.
Gabby nodded. I know what it's like to hit it off immediately with someone. My husband and I met in high school, and I knew from the first that he was the one. We had so much to talk and laugh about, I could have chatted with him for hours.
Gabby continued smiling, tapping into her real feelings about Derek to provide Andy with a false sense of ease.
What did you and Mariel talk about last night?
Andy smacked his lips together.
You know, I'm not totally sure. To be honest, I'd had a bit too much to drink. Everything's a bit hazy. But I know we had fun.
The lids drew down over the green eyes.
Why all the questions about Mariel?
His jaw dropped.
Wait, don't tell me she's in high school. She said she was an au pair. She said she was an adult.
Classic move, Gabby thought. Start discrediting the victim by making it seem that she might have lied about something not even in dispute. Nope, she's an au pair. 18, but not in high school. Andy grimaced.
I assumed she was at least 21, like the other au pairs.
Gabby noted his tense facial expression. If Mariel was remembering the prior night's conversation about her age correctly, then Andy had just told his first lie.
I'm sorry if she had some alcohol here, he continued. The bottles were lying around. Did she come home hungover and her house mom called you?
Gabby ignored the question. Did you sleep with her?
Andy lowered his head over his cup, examining the liquid as though something floated in it. A smile stretched across his face. He extended his mug toward her in a kind of cheers. A gentleman isn't supposed to tell. He punctuated the statement with another coy sip. Then you should be blabbing, Gabby thought. She sighed, pretending to be particularly put upon by her duties. Unfortunately, I have that report. The mention of a written document erased Andy's smirk. He lowered his cup and swirled the liquid. The Columbo Act wouldn't work anymore, Gabby realized. The guy finally understood that she wasn't here to make him answer for some underage party crashers.
Is she all right?
The concern on Andy's face was believable, though probably only because he actually felt the emotion for himself. If Mariel wasn't okay, then he was the obvious cause.
I invited her to have breakfast with me this morning, but she said she had to go. I sent her home in a car.
Gabby scratched at the sweat-curled hairs on the nape of her neck. Andy would use his $10 car service receipt as evidence that everything had been consensual, and there'd be somebody on a 12-person jury who would likely accept that argument. Gabby looked to the water, centering herself before the most confrontational part of the interview. A figure moved up the beach, toward the lawn. The black wetsuit that he wore, despite the heat, reminded her of Batman. She hoped he wasn't action hero-sized. Andy, though no more than 5'9", was still significantly bigger than she was. Sometimes people forgot they were dealing with an armed law officer when reeling from an accusation that could land them in prison. Gabby directed her attention back to Andy. He held his coffee cup between both hands, rotating it, fidgeting. Mariel came home with no memory of what happened before waking up next to you, she said, naked. Andy raised his eyebrows, transforming them into accents that emphasized his surprise. The reaction was rather subdued for a rape accusation, Gabby thought.
Well, maybe she didn't want anyone to know she'd slept with someone she'd just met.
Andy walked over to the kitchen island and placed his cup in the sink. He turned on the faucet and reached for a bottle of blue dish soap, which he immediately squeezed into the mug.
It must be easier to say she doesn't remember.
He rubbed his thumb around the cup's lip, wiping away the DNA from his mouth. Gabby watched the nonchalant way he eliminated evidence, certain that he had nothing to worry about from Marielle's allegations. He'd spent time figuring out what to do if she went to the cops, Gabby figured. He'd say one thing, she'd say another. The case would go nowhere. Mariel went to the hospital for a rape kit. Gabby tried to keep her face slack, her voice light.
Well, that's outrageous.
Andy shut off the faucet.
Ask anyone at the party. She was all over me last night. We were having a good time. I'm sorry if she woke up and had buyer's remorse. God knows I'm having some now.
The far wall of the house suddenly retracted. Chris stood in the opening. He was significantly taller than his roommate, and he also looked significantly older, though Gabby guessed that might be due to the thinning blonde hair set far back from his broad forehead and the silvery hairs between his pectorals.
Chris, this detective here, Gabriella, was it? She's looking into sexual assault allegations against me.
He gestured to his friend, becoming more animated given the presence of backup.
That girl from last night, the one that was making out with me in the kitchen, you saw her. She's now saying she didn't want to have...
She's claimed that she was too incapacitated to give consent, Gabby corrected.
She wasn't too incapacitated to tell me all the crazy ways she wanted it,
Andy said.
Is that consent?
Chris looked stricken, though only for a moment. He held an open palm toward his friend.
She must have seen the house and smelled money. Andy doesn't have to drug women to get laid.
Gabby nodded, scrawling 5 words in her notebook, Chris brought up the drugs. She hadn't suggested to either man that Mariel was claiming she'd been slipped anything, only that she'd been incapacitated. The natural implication was that Mariel had been blackout drunk during intercourse, which actually wouldn't have made Andy guilty of anything aside from contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Rape in the second degree required that Mariel's incapacitation stem from being given a debilitating substance without her consent. Were there drugs at the party? Andy looked insulted. No, wine, some beer, that's it. There weren't even shots. He shook his head. If she was on anything, she must have brought it for personal use. We didn't see it. With Chris and Andy backing each other up about Mariel's consent, and Fiona claiming she'd believed her friend had feigned tipsiness, Mariel didn't have much chance of winning any case. A rape kit would only prove she'd had sex, and if drugs showed up in Mariel's system, both Andy and Chris would say she'd willingly taken her own pills. Gabby had to hope that whatever substance had been stirred into Mariel's drink was something only 2 health-insured men could obtain with a prescription. Otherwise, the girl wouldn't have much of a chance at justice. She'd probably end up wishing she'd never told Dinah what had happened and involved police in the first place. Gabby closed her eyes for a moment longer than a blink, forcing her brain to switch gears from the rape investigation that was quickly going nowhere to her murder case. There were too many similarities between the party and the one Ben was claiming to have attended to doubt that he'd been at the house. However, his presence didn't mean he had an airtight alibi. He could have visited just long enough to create a semblance of having been somewhere else while his wife was being murdered. To rule out Ben, she'd need to know when he'd been at the party. Gabby approached the larger roommate. Chris had greenish eyes too, she realized, though a different color than Andy's. His were clearer and mixed with more blue, like sea glass rather than a graying river. Andy said that a man came here to collect his underage daughter and that you went out to talk to him. Did you?
Yeah, we kicked those girls out as soon as...
Gabby held up a hand. She'd already listened to Andy's defense for serving high schoolers. This dad, I understand he got into an altercation with some guy that had been flirting with his kid. Chris wiped sweat off his brow with the back of his hand.
I heard that, but the guy had taken off by the time I went outside.
When was that? Gabby pressed her pen to her notepad.
I'm not sure.
Chris wicked away the seawater clinging to his jawline with the heel of his hand.
Before 2 a.m., probably. I went to bed around 3, and it took a bit for everyone to leave, even after that crazed guy threatened to call the cops.
Gabby stared at the number 2 that she'd just scrawled onto the paper. Ben being gone from the party by that hour didn't make or break his defense. She needed to talk to someone who would have a more exact timeline. Did you get the name of the dad and daughter? Chris scratched the scant hair above his ear.
Not really. I think the guy's name started with a D or E or something. I remember what they looked like, though.
Gabby nodded for him to continue, holding her pen at the ready.
The girl was black, very pretty. She had her hair slicked back in a ponytail and a lot of shimmery makeup on.
Red lipstick. As Gabby scrawled down the details, she couldn't help but think they all could have been used to describe Kayla. Teenagers, though, tended toward the same trends. A slick ponytail and shimmery makeup must have been whatever the magazines were plastering on their summer covers.
The dad was also black. He was bald and he had a goatee. I thought he might have been a bodybuilder. He had huge guns and a big number 2. Tattooed on his arm.
Gabby stopped writing. The chances of there being 2 bald, goateed black men with number 2s on their biceps in the area were next to nil. The man was Derek, her husband.
He'd grabbed Kayla from this party. An invisible hand squeezed her throat. Her prime murder suspect had been chatting up her daughter. The notebook vibrated in Gabby's hand. She took down each man's contact information for her report and robotically warned them not to leave the area, her mind already on the phone call she needed to make.
"Do I need a lawyer?" Andy asked.
Gabby mumbled something about there not being any charges yet as she headed to the door. The glass walls seemed to aim the sun straight at her. She was sweating, dripping. She needed to get out of this house. She had to see her daughter.
Chapter 16, The Day Of. Jenny woke, surrounded by a dark, heavy damp. She thrashed against it, unsure of what it was or where she was. Oxygen streamed into her airways, bonded with the memory of her husband squeezing her neck until she'd passed out. She pushed herself upright under the sweat-drenched duvet and checked the moon's position through the balcony doors. It hung just above the horizon, a broken spotlight dangling far too low from the scaffolding. She hadn't been out long. Lewis, however, was no longer in the room. She lay there, forcing saliva down her raw throat, listening to the crashing waves still audible through the shut balcony door. A memory seeped into her swimming brain. She saw Lewis, bent over scented candles in the small apartment they'd shared in med school. He lit them with short matches they'd confiscated weeks earlier from a corner bar. Each strike against the carbon strip illuminated, for a moment, the man she'd fallen for. The boyish face, topped with ginger hair, the piercing blue-gray eyes beneath a preternaturally concerned brow. Jenny remembered how Lewis had cupped his hand around each flame, shielding it from the howling outside that had seemed to penetrate the thin walls of their high-rise apartment. Growing up in landlocked West Virginia, she'd never seen a hurricane or a superstorm or whatever the meteorologists had named the vortex of clouds closing in on them. She'd watched the news, awed and horrified by the footage of wind ripping willows from the ground and wielding them like battering rams against cars and street lamps. When the power had gone out, she'd screamed. Sure, nature's strike force had finally arrived at their doorstep. Lewis's chivalry had gone into overdrive that weekend. He'd made certain she would want for nothing, loading the pantry days beforehand and clearing out the local liquor store of her favorite Cabernet. He'd duct-taped the windows and filled the defunct fireplace with scented candles. He'd charged the electronics and rented her favorite films on DVD. She remembered snuggling with him beneath musty extra blankets and munching on almond butter sandwiches washed down with wine while the floodwaters blocked their building's egress. If she closed her eyes, she could almost feel the warmth of his skin, the way his body had radiated care and concern for her. The way it often still did. She'd loved him then. Maybe she still loved him. But Lewis had violated the unspoken rule that allowed their marriage to survive his outbursts. If he hit her, he had to be flagrantly sorry for a very, very long time. Months, at least. Contrition and promises of reform had to follow his combustion, enabling Jenny to regain her power and remember the good times. Their better days far outnumbered the bad. Lewis had become abusive only in the past 5 years, since she'd taken the high-profile sports anchor position. A couple's therapist they'd seen briefly had suggested that Lewis's anger stemmed from unresolved parental issues about money that made him feel threatened whenever it seemed like he was losing the traditional male provider role to Jenny. But she wouldn't relinquish her job and lose even more power to her unpredictable spouse. They'd reached an impasse. The only way through was for Jenny to run away. She slid off the bed, searching the shadowed floor for her purse. She'd leave tonight, the quicker the better. As soon as Louis realized that she intended to separate, he tried to get to Allie and convince her that Jenny was making up the abuse for leverage in the coming custody hearing. There was no way she could allow Louis to take their daughter from her. Jenny knew the statistics. If she left Allie with Louis, chances were good he'd wind up hitting her, too. Jenny grasped the corner of the bed and yanked herself upright. The room flashed dark and light as though the moon was set to strobe, an effect spurred by her brain's reaction to the prior trauma of having its main artery momentarily shut down. Her stomach lurched, threatening to send her dinner back up her inflamed esophagus. She stumbled to the balcony doors and flung them open. Breeze buffeted her face. She slumped into one of the Adirondack chairs and gulped salty air until her vision cleared. Nadal's voice wafted from the yard below her.
As I said before, Louis, that's not our business. We're a technology platform. You're a medical group. A platform. A website open to anybody with a verifiable medical license and a smartphone. We can't provide insurance for the universe of...
Jenny crawled from the chair back into the dark bedroom so that Louis wouldn't notice her presence. He might return to justify his anger, as he often did. She couldn't give him the opportunity to explain away his actions again, to return to the room with a glass of water, a pain reliever, and a list of rationalizations peppered with apologies. The voices rose, floating through the open balcony door like hot air.
That's not fair to doctors,
Louis was near shouting, his blood still up from their fight.
It's abdicating responsibility.
We'll have to agree to disagree then.
Nadal sounded calmer.
There's nothing left to say. We're not setting a precedent here.
Jenny heard the scrape of a chair across the deck. In a moment, her husband would barge back into the house, a heat-seeking missile looking for a warm target. The dim moonlight caught the pale color of her purse beneath the end table. She grabbed it, slipped out of the dark bedroom, and hurried to the ground floor. Louis and Nadal likely sat at the outdoor dining table. A glance over either man's shoulder would betray someone fleeing the house. Jenny ran on tiptoe into the narrow entryway. Her rushing blood resounded in her ears like the soundtrack to a thriller movie. In those films, the abusive husband always caught the wife once or twice before she finally escaped. She glanced over her shoulder as she grasped the front doorknob. No sign of Louis. Shells crunched under Jenny's feet as she sprinted down the driveway. She would run into town and then call a car service. Waiting outside the house was too risky. Louis could catch her before she had a chance to leave. A large male figure stepped from the shadows beside a red car. The drumbeat in Jenny's head silenced. She froze, prey trapped in a hunter's scope. Excuses raced through her brain. She needed a sweater from the trunk. She'd wanted some air. She'd come out to apologize.
Jenny?
Her fear vanished. The voice was so different from the one that spiked the hairs on her neck. Ben walked toward her. The full moon cast him in a cobalt hue, the melancholy subject of a young Picasso.
Did he hurt you?
The question made Jenny fully aware of her burning throat. She couldn't force an answer. Instead, she flung her arms around his firm torso and pressed herself to his chest, wanting to dissolve into the safety of his skin.
I can't take it anymore.
Her words clawed and scratched their way out of her raw esophagus.
I'm leaving him. I'm doing it. I'm finally going to leave.
Ben angled his head down, enabling Jenny to meet his lips with her own. The kiss empowered her, just as it had the first time she'd experienced it, 6 months earlier. She held his neck as she returned his caress, communicating her desire,
her approval. Her husband didn't deserve her fidelity. In the dark, encircled by Ben's strong arms, she didn't care what might happen.
"I want you," she whispered. "I want you. I want you."
With each repetition, her voice grew stronger. Lewis couldn't control her. Lewis didn't deserve her. Lewis didn't know what she was capable of. Chapter 17, The Day Of.
My husband cheated with the woman staying downstairs.
Susan whispered the words in the silent bedroom, trying to compel her acceptance of the surreal situation by forcing herself to describe it. Nadal, the man who had pledged his enduring love and fidelity to her a dozen years ago, the partner with whom she raised their boys, the person for whom she'd left her job, her parents, her beloved West Coast, and moved clear across the country.
He'd slept with Rachel.
Rachel, the mother of their son's best friend, the damn neighbor. Susan reread the email in front of her multiple times like it was a poem, trying to wedge different meanings into the words. Tears blurred the letters into a mess of black lines. She set the computer to the side, turned into the mattress, and thrust her face into a pillow. The fabric muffled her anguished screams.
What was she supposed to do now?
She couldn't stay in the house with a homewrecker. But she couldn't simply return to Westchester either. The other woman lived next door.
She could strangle him. How could he have made such a stupid mistake?
Susan imagined how the affair would have started. Rachel, miserably married and looking for company, had probably run into Nadal in the city. No doubt she'd suggested a drink in some nearby hotel bar. Nadal would have agreed, finally heeding Susan's nagging to befriend the neighbors. One cocktail had turned into several. They'd begun flirting, much like Susan had with her ex-work husband after having one too many glasses of wine at the office Christmas party. Flirting could bloom into feeling so easily. Rachel had ultimately decided that she was attracted to Nadal, because what heterosexual woman wouldn't be? And Nadal, uninhibitedly drunk and not needing to rush home to relieve the sitter as she'd always done, had checked into a room with the woman next door. Afterward, Susan figured, he'd have returned home to his naive wife dozing in bed. He'd likely mumbled something about working extra late, knowing she wouldn't question a longer than usual day. She'd most certainly kissed the lips that had been on Rachel's body minutes before and told him that she loved him. "Good night, honey. Sorry work has been so rough." Poor little trusting idiot. Had the guilt sickened him? She wondered. Had he considered confessing, but forced himself to keep the secret, believing they'd both be happier if she remained ignorant? Had he persuaded himself he could forget all about that night and move on? Her husband didn't want to leave her for Rachel, at least not yet. The email made clear that he'd been avoiding her, and he'd been unwilling to go into the house with Rachel alone. Probably he felt guilty about what had happened. But Susan couldn't guarantee that would last. Not if Rachel convinced him they could arrive at some arrangement. The room suddenly felt like a sauna, its hot air saturated with too much emotion to inhale. She couldn't spend another moment under the same roof as that backstabbing bitch or her own lying spouse. Her black suitcase lay open beside the bed. Susan fell to her knees beside it and pulled at the zipper. She'd pack up and fly back to Washington for the week, forcing Nadal to consider his future without the wife who had stood by him, working and caring for the kids when he'd left his secure job to start a company in their unfinished basement. She'd give him a sample of solitary life as another middle-aged man pathetically preening for 20-somethings. See how he'd fare.
Salty tears tumbled from her eyes into her trembling mouth. Who was she kidding? Nadal would do fine. He was a fit, handsome, soon-to-be multimillionaire. He'd have 20-year-olds fluttering their eyelashes as soon as he entered a room. And if he didn't, there was always Rachel, sitting somewhere on the beach, no doubt hoping Nadal might go out and check on her. What if he was doing that right now? Susan fled the bed as if the mattress had caught fire. She flung open the door and hurried into the hallway, hoping to hear Nadal and Lewis's voices floating from the kitchen. The mezzanine had the waiting air of a coffin. Someone had shut off the overhead lights, leaving the house illuminated solely by the full moon blasting through the wall of windows. The solitary light source transformed the empty great room into a chiaroscuro painting, casting a luminous halo on the white couch that contrasted with the charcoal shadows in every corner. Footsteps echoed from the dark hallway that hid Rachel and Ben's bedroom. Susan shirked from the railing. She couldn't see Rachel like this, puffy from crying and in her we-don't-have-sex-anymore pajamas, the consummate sad little housewife. When she ultimately confronted Rachel, she'd be dressed and in full makeup, making clear to that tramp exactly whose husband she'd tried to steal. She'd be dressed to fucking kill. A male figure emerged into the noir light, his body outlined by the moon, even as his face remained in shadow. He turned toward the stairs. Susan recognized the shape of her husband. He'd come from the whore's bedroom. Once, when Susan had been breaking down a roast chicken for her boys, she'd sliced near through her left index finger with a boning knife. The cut had been made with such precision and with such a sharp tool that she hadn't felt a thing. She'd watched the blood gush for a full second, staining half of the bird's breast a cardinal red before her adrenaline had kicked in, spurring her to wrap her wound in a paper towel and head to the hospital. Nadal's presence outside his lover's bedroom was that knife. Nadal? She spoke his name as though it were a question. In some ways, she supposed it was. The man she'd thought she knew would never have cheated on her, let alone been stupid enough to do it with a woman his wife risked seeing at every school event and sports game, each time she walked out their damn house. Hi, honey. His teeth shone in the darkness. Sorry, that conversation took longer than I thought. Susan examined his smile, searching for traces of his dishonesty. The moonlight worked like candles, obscuring the wrinkles and acne scars, the marks of poor living that nothing but darkness could mask. Nadal looked sincerely happy to see her, unconcerned that she'd almost caught him in the act. The conversation with Rachel, you mean?
What? No, Lewis.
Nadal sounded genuinely confused. How could he lie so easily? You were coming from Rachel's room. Nadal scratched at his jawline, reminding Susan that he'd shaved. He'd wanted to be nice and smooth for his girlfriend.
Lewis had a question that I thought she might be able to answer.
Then why didn't he ask? Nadal's head lowered as he stepped toward her.
Babe, are you all right? You sound...
Answer me. If Lewis had a question, why didn't he ask? Nadal stood close enough for her to finally see his pinched brow.
She wasn't even there.
Lucky me, I guess.
Huh?
She was there the other night, though, right?
What are you talking about?
Nadal's dark eyes betrayed him. Rather than narrowing with confusion, they opened wider. He knew what she was talking about. I saw the email. Rage flooded her voice like sewer water from a released drain. I opened your laptop to check for a message from the boys. Your email was on the screen. She sent you a message. Nadal shut his eyes, blocking her from seeing the workings of his brain as he struggled to invent a believable excuse.
That was about work.
Are you kidding me? I read it, Nadal. I don't usually become involved like this with neighbors. That's about work?
It was. She has a client that—
Stop!
Susan's hands flew in the air, signing the disgust and disappointment she felt too deeply to verbally express.
Stop lying! I read it!
What do you think you read?
Nadal lowered his voice to a seething whisper.
I am telling you that her email was about work. She has a malpractice case.
He thought her an imbecile. How else could he honestly expect she'd buy that he and Rachel had legitimate business together? Rachel was a glorified ambulance chaser, and Nadal ran a tech company. Rachel wouldn't consult with him, and he definitely wouldn't ask her any legal questions. He had a giant law firm on retainer. He was married to an attorney.
You're unbelievable. You're standing there, lying straight to my face.
Her hands shot out, as usual, to punctuate her statement. They landed full force on Nadal's chest. Nadal's lips curled into a line. He shook his head as if she were Jonah in the midst of a fit.
There must have been some weird drug in one of those bottles of wine, because everyone here is going nuts. I told you the truth. Rachel emailed about work, and I'm not going to stand here while you create a scene.
She centered herself in the narrow hallway leading to their room.
I'm creating a scene. That's your tactic? Play the aggrieved spouse married to a crazy lady?
Nadal raised an open palm.
It's been a long, stressful day. I'm going to bed. We'll talk about this in the morning when you're more rational.
I'm completely...
He grabbed her shoulder and pushed her to the side. The move was barely noticeable, more of a nudge than a blow. Still, she stumbled backward, reeling from his unexpected aggression. In 12 years of marriage and 14 years together, her husband had never raised a finger to her in anger. Now he was shoving her out of the way. She braced herself for a door slam as Nadal disappeared into the bedroom. But it didn't come. He passed through the jam and flipped on a light inside, transforming the entrance into an invitation. Part of her, the part that still desperately loved her husband, urged her to accept. It begged her to follow him inside, close the door behind her, and keep posing questions until he broke down and apologized, enabling her to start forgiving him. A stronger part, however, kept her from moving, made her obey the hissing voice in her lizard brain, warning her against trapping her husband in that room. She was too angry, too capable of violence. Susan turned away from the bedroom toward the wall of windows. The moon dangled in the center of the top pane. An air freshener hung over a rear-view mirror, driving out the dark and damp. Susan guessed the time was shortly before midnight. She'd have to find something to do with herself for the next hour, until Nadal fell asleep. She couldn't trust herself to behave rationally around him, or Rachel. Motion caught her eye. Lewis sat at the outdoor table, pouring something from a glittering bottle. Scotch, probably. Maybe wine. Hopefully, wine. She wiped her fingers beneath her eyes and nose, fixing herself as best she could without a mirror. Never before had she so badly needed a drink.
Chapter 18. The Day After. Gabby's office door bounced against the wall, unable to absorb the fury with which she'd thrown it open. Her husband sat behind her desk, hands folded beside the placard with her new title. Kayla sat across from him. As Gabby stormed in, her daughter looked over her shoulder and pursed her painted lips as though watching someone behaving badly. Their reserved demeanors poured salt on Gabby's raw anger.
How could Derek act so calm and collected when their daughter had sneaked into a party thrown by sexual predators to drink illegally, and he'd committed third-degree assault? Did he not realize what could have happened to them? Instead of investigating Mariel's date rape, she could be in a hospital, squeezing her teenager's hand as a forensic examiner roughly swabbed for a stranger's sperm, or perhaps wiping off vomit induced by some sickening cocktail of antiviral and anticonception drugs. Derek, meanwhile, could be in jail for sucker-punching a wealthy white tourist, praying that some prosecutor wouldn't look at his 6'3" boxer body and dark black skin and see a threat that needed to be locked up for the maximum year-long sentence. Worse, he could be in the hospital himself. The thought of the alternative universe she'd come so close to entering made her vibrate like a high note. She stood in the door jamb, shaking and staring at the irreplaceable pieces of her heart in the room, unable to release the scream in her chest. Tears blurred her visions of Kayla into another version, without the Cole emphasizing the upturned eyes and gloss slicking the pouty lips. She was her beach baby, with golden brown skin and braided pigtails, each tied with bright resin beads that clacked like castanets as she ran along the water's edge. "I want the makeup off." The words exploded from Gabby's tight throat. She pointed to her husband. "There are tissues in the top drawer. Hand them to her. I want it off. All of it. Off." Derek opened the drawer, rolling his eyes toward their child as if to say, "You did it now." He passed the plastic tissue pack across the desk. Kayla peeled back the tab and withdrew a Kleenex. "I'm sorry, Mom." She wiped the napkin across her mouth, smearing the strawberry color rather than removing it. "I'd only heard it was a pool party. Alice, she's the au pair that watches Katie's little brother, was invited. She told her about it, and Katie said she was going. I thought the crowd would be younger." Gabby swatted a tear and strode over to Derek, passing a bookcase stacked with law manuals and mayoral commendations. She stood beside him and tried to glare through her tears at her kid. "You lied, and you drank." Kayla worried the tissue between her fingers. "I had a plastic cup with some rosé. It barely..."